Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Welcome to Ignite Your Luminescent Life, Intuitive Business Mastery and Staff, with me, your host, Dr. Elena Espinal. I am here super, super excited because I am streaming live. We're doing a little experiment, and my guest with me is Akeem Nowak, and I will give a really good and proper introduction for him in here in a minute, but I just want to acknowledge him because he is being a trooper and doing this really awesome experiment where we are streaming it on the radio, we're streaming it via Facebook Live and recording it. So I have like this little nice little tech compilation, and he's being super, super trooper. So for those of you that don't know me, I'm Dr. Elena Espinal. I'm a high performance psychologist and an intuitive business mentor who really loves to empower people to awaken to the divine purpose and to express that through profitable and transformational businesses. Now, I am super excited because Akeem is an incredible author, speaker, and an executive coach. And he's like kind of like this like international celebrity, I would think of you. His term is called Influence, and he has supported many Fortune 500 executives around the globe. He has a brand new book. I don't know if it has already become a bestseller or if it's kind of rising there. That's called The Moment, A Practical Guide to Creating a Mindful Life. And it has just been published, and we're going to be talking a lot about this, and I'm super, super excited. His work has really been featured in like 60 Minutes and Fox News and NPR, USA Today, and really like all kinds of things. So he is just, and besides all of that, he's just a really incredible human being, just down to earth, really wise, funny. You will get to see some of that. So Akeem, welcome.
Elena, it's great to be here. And I was listening to my introduction, which is always a torture to hear people talk about yourself. But what I hope we get to do, because you talk about peak performance, and I support super successful people.
Uh-huh.
I think the link we share, we both like to go deep into intuition and the less obvious wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we both bring to our work. So I can't wait to dive into that a little bit with you.
Yeah, I'm just super, super excited. And in fact, you know, I usually invite people and I don't tell them, talk about this. You know, I always ask them, what do you want to talk about? And so when I got your, just your title of like Four Keys to Creating a Mindful Life in a Distracted World, I was like, oh, I'm super excited. You know, like all my clients always tell me, they tease me because they're like, you always have a way to bring everything back to meditation. Like, what is it about meditation? You know? And I'm like, well, what is not about meditation, you know? And so I'm just really, really delighted that you are going to be bringing this without my prompting. It's all you. So why don't you share a little bit about you and kind of what, like, how did you get to be doing the work that you're doing? You know, like, I think that we've all kind of gone through a path. So I'm curious, like, what's been your path to becoming?
So I'm trying to think about what's important.
Yes.
To the work that I currently do, because
uh-huh.
I have ways to get there. But a big influence in my life was early in my career when I was in my 20s. I was an acting coach at some big acting schools in New York. Okay. I taught at NYU for a while. And I learned a lot from working with actors. I worked as an actor for a while myself. I thought I was a really horrible actor. But the training I got, which is about, as an actor, you are trained to, you rehearse about how to be fully in the moment,
yes.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And admire great actors and we're moved by them, they stir us, but there's a lot of craft behind that. And that craft is very relevant to all of us in life.
Yeah.
And it lives in the body and the senses, our deepest relationship to ourselves. So I'd love to talk about that some more. So that was really important. The other part, and I think you and I share this, you know, we're both not originally from the United States. I think of myself as an international soul. I'm originally from Germany. My childhood was spent in Portugal and Turkey. As an adult, I lived in Trinidad and Tobago for a while. And the reason I mention all this is I think our culture and where we come from really influences how we relate to others and see the world.
Yeah.
There's no right or wrong, but I think it behooves us to be conscious about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because I coach people who work globally and internationally, then the question is, how are you successful on an international stage when your cultural imprint is from a very specific place and your intuition comes from that place as well?
Yes.
So there's lots more, but those two touch points I think are really important to the work that I do and the work that really interests me.
Oh, and I love that you share that. So, I mean, so I know I did know that you were acting coordinating, but I did, like you said that, and I could already see like all of these chains of resonance, right? Because I was a ballerina, and then I was a dance teacher and a choreographer for many years. And, so then I'm like, oh, that's like, I think that when you're an artist, like your brain works as an art, like you don't ever change that. Like your brain continues to be a brain of an artist that then takes on a whole bunch of different dimensions.
And just to go deeper with that, like one of, because most successful actors at some point went to acting school and they studied acting.
Yeah.
It's a craft.
Yeah.
Even though you think they're just magically good, they're worked at it, right? And regardless of who you study with, very early on in your actor training, your teacher is going to do lots of sensory exercises.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he or she is going to heighten how you smell, how you hear.
Uh-huh.
And they do it because we understand that the senses are a connection to emotion and memory, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the power of it. And one way of being more mindful and living more in the moment is to just pay, because we're trained to be successful by being in our heads. And I love smart, brainy people. So I say, I love that.
Well, you are one.
Like, this is a simple exercise, for example, that I might do with a client or in a workshop, and it sounds like meditation, it's not, but I might say, just close your eyes for a minute, and for a minute, just listen to all the sounds that are going on around you. You don't need to do anything else, and after a minute, I would ask you, so what are the sounds you heard?
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, like the wind rustling, the car driving by, a child screaming, and chances are, if I hadn't asked you to focus on that, you wouldn't have heard any of it.
Totally.
But part of present reality is that all of that is going on. And it doesn't mean we have to always take in everything,
right.
But the beauty is the sound of the car driving by, that might connect to another thing that I remember. It might have another association. So there are rich associations with all the stuff we hear in the moment. So when we hear, see, smell, taste more, it more deeply connects us to everything we've already experienced in life.
Totally.
So we show up as a full human being.
Totally.
And those are really fun exercises to do. And I used to do those with actors in acting school, and I do them with my corporate clients.
Mm-hmm. Which I love, just hearing you hearing you say that, it totally took me back to some of my training, and some of the exercises that I do as well. And it's just really beautiful because when we're, and this kind of goes back to the piece that you talked about, intuition and being embodied, right? Like, I think that one of the most beautiful gifts that we have of being alive is that we get to have a body, we get to be embodied, and yet not all of us are actually truly embodied. There's so many people that are kind of walking around kind of like with your head, like, floating around, right? Like, it's your head over here and your body's like completely disconnected and separate. And You know, and we tend to value so much of our decision making and everything just on our mind. And then we don't really listen to all of the wisdom that can come from the rest of our senses and the rest of our body. So, yeah,
I have many associations. I so like the word embodied.
Uh-huh.
And but if you haven't used it, it can sound like, what the heck are they talking about?
Yes.
When I coach, and I coach very successful people, and we have, since you're a psychologist, we have my version of what you might call an intake conversation,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have an intake where I look for what we want to work on, and I probe a little bit, and I would say, three quarters of the time, what we get to is, the person will say, I just want to feel comfortable in my own skin.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The people who are embodied, have settled into their body, and they don't feel like they have to try extra hard to represent themselves, to impress people. It doesn't mean we don't care about people. We pay in, we pay attention to the relationships, and we speak with intention,
mm-hmm,
but we don't do the extra effort. I have a coach colleague named Paul Zellerzer, who's a good friend whose work I admire, and he was talking the other day about the notion of the hungry ghost, which is a Buddhist term.
Mm.
And I'd heard it, but I said, help me understand what the hungry ghost is.
Yes.
The hungry ghost is really the sense of, you know, we've all been people who are just trying a little too hard in every situation, like somebody who wants to sell you a program, they're pushing a little too hard, or they're talking to their boss and they're trying a little too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So the hungry ghost is the deep part of your soul that doesn't trust that what you're doing is enough.
Mm.
And embodied people are not ruled by their hungry soul.
Mm-hmm.
They have tamed the hungry soul. Does that make sense, Elena?
Oh my gosh, yes. And I love that you bring this up, because I think that this is such a core issue for so many of us, you know. This is, I mean, what brought to me is, it's something I don't normally share a lot, you know. One of the reasons that really brought me to psychology, you know, I was actually a lot of people think that I went from psychology to coaching and from psychology to peak performance, but it was actually the other way around. I was, you know, I was a teacher and a coach first, and I did peak performance, and then I went into deeper psychology. But one of the things that drew me there was that I struggled with an eating disorder for a really, really long time. And so I spent many years of my life really not being embodied. And when you talked about that hungry ghost, like, that was so much, like, I struggled with that so much, you know, like, trying too hard. And in fact, one of the things that woke me up was that I was trying so hard that my body broke down, you know?
Yeah.
And that's been kind of like this lesson for me to learn throughout life, which is part of the reason why it's part of what I teach, right? Because I think that we end up teaching some of the things that we've had to learn at a really deep level.
to build on what you just said, as a man who's getting older,
mm-hmm,
I so joke, like, when I got to my 50s, like, everything an aging man can get, I got prematurely, like, all this stuff, the whole list,
uh-huh,
which I regurgitate. So suddenly, my body feels different, and I feel different in my body.
Mm-hmm.
So my job is to embrace that, accept it, make peace with it,
mm-hmm,
be the best I can be with a body that's changing. I have a physical trainer. I do all those things.
Mm-hmm.
But, because our relationship with the body keeps changing too. And I think when I want to make successful people in life are at peace with this container, which is the body,
mm-hmm,
they care of it, they tend to it, but they settle into it with grace.
Yeah. And I love that you said that, because, you know, I don't think that it's just you as an aging man. I think that this is all of us, right? Like, we are constantly changing and evolving, and right, like, things, our bodies are not going to work the same way, and we look different. And so this making peace, I talk about embracing, like, really truly embracing, not just accepting, because when I thought about, like, accepting, maybe it's a first step, but I feel like acceptance is still kind of has that critical, like, yeah, I don't like it, but that, okay, fine, you know. But I think about it from the perspective of, like, truly, like, embracing and truly saying, like, this is my container, and it actually has all this wisdom to give back to me.
Yeah, and I want to talk about it some more, but I if I can play with the notion,
yes,
of embracing, And I want to relate it to being successful in
mm-hmm.
life.
Yes.
So it is about embracing my container,
mm-hmm.
but in this moment right now, embracing you
mm-hmm.
as the other container I'm engaging with,
yeah.
embracing this moment without forcing it, without mm-hmm. it trying to make it anything
mm-hmm.
else. And that sounds so simple because the social context is we're doing a radio program, you're the host, I'm your guest. That can lead to all sorts of, excuse my English, mental shit, right?
Sure.
About how we play that
yeah.
out. So being able to be embodied in this container with another person without the extra push is where also real impact happens.
Totally. Well, and this actually, and I just want to highlight how beautiful this is, just showing up for you consistently, because before
yeah.
we went on air, right? And I said, okay, we're going to try these things. And you said, okay, like I'm game. I'll just go with the flow, whatever it is that it is, will be, you know? And I think that's really, really beautiful. And that's a message that, so this is, I think, where your work and my work really come together and where mindfulness really matters, right? So I often talk about like high performance and peak performance as being an altered state of consciousness of relaxed attention.
Nice. I love that, Vilina.
Right? And so in order for you to have that relaxed attention, I mean, if you think about what that means, it's actually being present. Right?
Let me just build on that because a term I use and basically...
Perfect. Yeah,
it.
I love it. This is the part that's awesome.
Another Buddhist term is called prajna wisdom. And prajna
yes.
says it's a word for deep insight, deep wisdom. We sometimes almost trivialize by calling it intuition, and I love intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And but when we're in a state of relaxed attention, which is the phrase you use, we are open to receiving that wisdom.
Yeah.
And it can sound so mysterious, but like a very specific example that all of us have experienced. Let's say I meet you at a social function for the
mm-hmm.
first time, really.
Mm-hmm.
We get to a conversation. We have a great conversation. You know, there's that moment where suddenly a voice in me goes, gosh, I think she will be a friend for life.
Mm.
That voice, I think she'll be a... That's prajna wisdom.
Yes.
Now, this, and sometimes it's a voice, sometimes we see an image,
yeah.
sometimes we are embodied, so we experience it differently.
Yes.
I use the voice because it's the most common, but there are different ways in which it talks to us. But the point I think we're both making is this wisdom is available to us all the time.
Yeah.
It's a language we need to learn to hear
mm-hmm.
and see and feel. When we do, we tend to make much smarter decisions and we also learn how to stay away from trouble and things that are not good for us, because the mind says that would be great, but wisdom says, heck, stay away.
Totally. Well, and I, you know, I'm going to be super fully transparent, because I think that this is something that I am so passionate about teaching, because I've struggled with it. And I still do sometimes, because my mind, like, you know, how I'm wired, and like what you were talking about, maybe culturally, whether it's like, you know, where I grew up or my family, it's like, do, 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 go, go, go. Right. And it's like this push. And then I have to be either reminded by something or maybe a good friend. And then I'm like, yeah, okay. Slow down. Fine. Okay. Slow, you know, and then it's like, it's there. But we most of the time are so busy trying to do something or, you know, trying to get somewhere that we don't really want to even take the time to slow down enough to listen. Because you said it's a language that's available to us all the time. We just need to learn.
Let me tell you a story related to it, because I think one of the, there's a tension between, I believe, in having a vision and intention, which is the thing that pulls us to the future. That in itself can become a limiting idea of what we think it could be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember, this was a long time, early 90s, I left my career in show business, I lived in Trinidad and Tobago, and I came back to New York City totally broke, and I had to get a job. And all my resume was theater. But I was broke, and I was living in the very, very fabulous East Village. And I remember I was going on a job interview to downtown Brooklyn. And this was before Brooklyn was fashionable and trendy. Like there's something wrong about taking a subway in the opposite direction. You're supposed to drive into Manhattan for a job.
Uh-huh.
And go going to downtown Brooklyn, and I went to this job interview. I remember the building was 50 Court Street, fifth floor, for a social services agency to be a mediation trainer. And I remember the lobby looked sad and dilapidated, like the classic place where, you know, they don't have money to have a pretty office, pretty lobby. And I'm going down the hallway, and everything, like every fiber in me wanted to run out and say, screw this interview. Like this is, like, your life is going down the toilet. You don't want to be there. And I remember then I was taken to the interview, down a hallway, took a turn, into a sad little room that didn't even have a window.
Oh.
But a woman stood up. Her name is Lynn Hurdle Price. She's a good friend now. And within 30 seconds, I knew I wanted to work for her, you know. But if I had been limited by my idea of what next job should be, the great office, the glitzy look, whatever, but something in me knew it was about her energy, her spirit, which was big and embracing and welcoming. I knew that she was the guide to the next part of my life.
Oh, that just brings tears to my eyes. It's just so beautiful.
But you know how easy it is for us to talk ourselves out of that.
Yeah.
Because we have this fixed idea of what it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. That's such a beautiful story. So powerful and very, really touched me, because you're just reminding me of, like, things are really important, and I'm sure that you're reminding many of the people that are listening and tuning in right now. And it's so beautiful because what you actually alluded to in this story, which I really want to pull apart, is the first judgment that you made, right? So that we could potentially say that was your intuition. You said every fiber in my being was saying, turn around and go the other direction, which we a lot of times do because we think that intuition is just hard, but intuition is really integration of, you know, mind, heart, body, soul, right? But we could just immediately attribute, but there was something in you that still pulled you to move forward. And that the moment, like, you were open, right? Like, so you didn't allow that judgment to just close you. You were like, okay, but I'm going to move through.
But to, I love the way you explained it, first of all. And another term I'd like for our listeners to play with, being in that dilapidated lobby and waiting for the interview, that was the moment of very high discomfort because everything felt wrong. And in my experience, more successful people have more tolerance for a certain level of discomfort.
Yeah.
And what comes out of the other side is more interesting.
Yeah.
Whereas if we run from discomfort too quickly, we never discover the other side.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I don't know what your zone of discomfort is. That's different for different people, and I honor that.
Yeah.
Ability to say, shoot, this really doesn't feel good, but let me at least show up for the conversation rather than running away, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, tuning in a little bit to some of the comments, and Joy is listening, and she said, I like how you describe this. Judgment is one aspect of information, but not necessarily the one that we need to listen to. And so to tie that to what you just said, it's like so, so, so key, because I often talk about, we have oversimplified this idea of tuning into our body, wisdom, and intuition as things that are good feel good and things that are bad feel bad. Without recognizing that sometimes the things that are the best for us are going to have this, I call it the skinny stretch, you know, of like, and just kind of thinking of like when a butterfly needs to like leave the cocoon, and like you have to go through this period where it feels really, really uncomfortable and things are not flowing really easily and there's a lot of discomfort and pain. And like you said, most successful people have a higher tolerance for that discomfort. And so I think that being able to kind of tune into that component and then saying, okay, so then, and it's not that you either have it or you don't, like you can actually develop, right? You can increase your tolerance to discomfort so that you become, you're expanding your context, and then you can become more and more successful because you're dealing with that better, right? So
here's a, I see a therapist myself, so I love the relationship with my therapist. But one distinction that's very important, because to go back to the word judgment we just talked about, because we know being judgmental isn't cool.
Mm-hmm.
Part of being successful is we do have to make judgments in certain situations about, yes, this is the right path for me, or this is not. And so part of being successful is the ability to make decisions,
yes,
which is choosing one thing over another, which is making a judgment without being judgmental. But then,
say that again, making a judgment without being judgmental. I think that's
you. But then the question is, so what's the source of our decision making?
Uh-huh.
Right? So some of it can be totally cognitive, mm-hmm, research based.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of data, and some of it can be wisdom prajna based.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the best decisions combine all of that.
Yeah.
Sometimes, if we're not used to listening to our wisdom, prajna, intuition, some people try to distinguish is this just another illusion I'm creating?
Right.
Because it feels good.
Yeah.
Or is it true wisdom?
Yeah.
But as you said, it's a muscle that can be practiced. And I for our listeners, I want to say it's part of it is understanding, learning how wisdom talks to you. Again, some people really hear it's like a voice giving you wisdom and guidance, and no, you're not crazy. That's,
yes,
a voice giving you wisdom and guidance.
Yes.
It's almost like a little cliche. You know, you walk down the street and you see a blinking neon light, and what the neon light says relates to something that's on your mind, and that's the answer. You're seeing the answer, but your job is to make the connection. Or if you're a very physical person, you know, you're about to have dinner with somebody, and before the dinner, you're getting physically sick, and your body is telling you something that psychically is wrong about this meeting, right? So, and the moment we know how it talks to us, then we tune into it more frequently.
Yeah, and I think that what you're saying is super important. It's just kind of recognizing that there's not a one way. There's not a one. This is the only way, right? That it could be images, it could be this voice, it could be the sense. I have like my heart does something that I just recognize is,
right,
you know, what it needs to happen. But I think, and you brought something else up, which I really loved, is it's really tuning into all information,
mm-hmm,
and noticing, because so I have kind of created this little rule for myself that when I hear something three times, then that's a message from the universe that I need to do something. So if somebody mentions a book, a movie, a whatever, and it's coming from like random different sources, and then it's like happening, like, you know, I'm like, okay, like this is something that I need to pay attention to. But the thing is, most of us don't even can count those things because we're not actually being mindful enough in the information that we're consuming or even the conversations that we're having to be able to remember, like, oh, this person mentioned this thing. And then this other person over here is mentioning the thing. And maybe this is something I ought to look at or pay attention to or whatever. So
if I just build on that.
Yeah, please.
I think people who are successful in life are pretty good at creating meaning, finding meaning, and making meaning of things.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, historically, the way we've done meaning making, mm-hmm, is, you know, we reflect on what happened last week and say, oh, now I understand what that meant.
Right.
But in the moment, we don't know what it is.
Right.
Sometimes we don't know what it is, but what you're just describing is, if I'm paying attention to the stimuli, in the moment, I can connect the dots and say, I think I'm supposed to see this movie.
Correct.
Right? And the same, like the story I told you about meeting the person at the social function.
Yeah.
Gosh, this person is going to be a friend for life.
Mm-hmm.
Me discovering meaning in the moment, it's not just an ordinary chat,
right,
it's the beginning of a beautiful relationship.
Yeah.
And that meaning, the moment I get it, it enhances the rest of the conversation. So that skill can be developed.
Totally.
The wisdom part relates to how we make meaning. And in my experience, people who are successful in life are good at, they discover meaning faster for themselves.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
And they know how to create meaning for others, and which means every experience in life becomes richer and deeper.
Yes,
and
I agree.
It happens in the moment. You know.
I couldn't agree. And so I'm just going to have to repeat that because I think that that's super huge. You said every successful person is actually able to discover meaning or create meaning faster, and create meaning faster for other people, like for themselves and for other people, which I think it totally, absolutely, 100% true. And you're probably a big fan of Man's Search for Meaning.
Yes.
Yeah.
I quote that in my book, so I love that book. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I just, you know, it's like Viktor Frankl was somebody that like also like really influenced me so much, you know, and so I'm guessing that that was, you know, part of.
But if I may build on that, so there's a positive psychologist whose work I very much admire, who you probably know, Dr. Barbara Fredrickson.
Yes. Happiness guru.
Yeah, happiness guru, and a book, and I'll mention this because this is a conversation I write about it in my current book. I do this work with my clients. So this is a concept around meaning that I love. She talks about the micro moments of love. It's in our book, Love 2.0. And because we tend to think of love as the big love, we have the romantic love or the love for mom and dad. But she says, you know, there can be little micro moments of love with strangers that you will never see again.
Mm-hmm.
The moment you entertain the possibility that can happen. Suddenly those moments happen everywhere. So I'll tell you a little story about this. Because I live in South Florida, and I just visited a friend in Naples on the West Coast, and then had to drive back around Alligator Alley through the Everglades to go back to the East Coast in Hollywood, Florida, where I live. And there's a toll booth that you go through. This was an intentional micro moment of love I created. And I'm telling you the story because everyone who's listening can do this intentionally.
Yeah.
I'm driving up, and I actually have a friend on the phone who I'm talking with. And, you know, there's a stranger at the toll booth who's taking my $3. And she's a woman of a certain age, and she's wearing these big glasses. She's probably in her 60s. And I out of my mouth, I say, you look like an Italian movie star. And she just starts to giggle, and she says, don't I wish? And then I said, well, maybe you are. Maybe you're rehearsing for your next great movie role. And then she just gives me my receipt. She smiles. I smile. We leave. But that's a little moment where I intentionally wanted to create a moment of joy for us.
Yeah.
The trigger was, though, I noticed she had positive energy, and she really had these wonderful glasses. So, and the power of that stuff for me is, I know I felt that joy throughout the entire car ride afterwards, and I know she continued to feel. So those are the ripple effects.
Yes.
Creating a micro moment of love, and it's so simple, and you create it in the moment.
I love that. I love so much that you share that, and you know, it's so beautiful because it applies to really anybody and everybody. You know, like for a long time, I used to think, I can't really make a difference in people's lives until I get this degree, until I become this, until I become a psychologist, until I, you know, and I find that so many of us do that. And we underestimate the power that we have to make a difference in our lives and other people's lives in these micro moments, you know, like just your story reminded me of being at the grocery store, and it wasn't the teller, it was the bagger. He had like such a great like energy, and he like, we had like so much fun bagging groceries, you know, and I'm thinking like, wow, like this person just totally like made my day, and he is bagging groceries, you know. And so that means that anybody can make a difference in anybody's life, right?
Yep.
So I want to come back to something, because
but let me just one.
Yeah, yeah.
But
please.
It requires being conscious of it and
intentional,
and knowing that it is possible and wanting to create it.
Yes, consciousness, awareness that it's possible, consciousness that it can happen, and being intentional, right? Like having that desire and that intention of showing up and doing it, right? Because, I mean, it's funny because I think that we forget that sometimes being crabby actually takes more energy than being happy, you know, but we tend to forget. So anyway, I wanted to go back to this because it was one of the questions that was posed, which I really love, which was about this piece about making judgments without being judgmental. And so I wanted to see if you can kind of explain to us a little bit deeper, like how that process goes.
Well, we have to discern between sometimes when we have to make a decision, you know, we have to discern between what might be the best. what might be a better decision or a not so good decision. And the stereotype is, well, there is no bad decision and it's all, it'll get you where you go. But you go to buy a new car and you're drawn to three different cars. We have to, some judgment and some process is involved.
Right.
We have our own criteria.
Yeah.
And we have our habits about how we historically make those decisions. So the ability to discern, judgmental would mean, if we use cars as a metaphor, well, those two cars totally suck or are horrible. I don't know why anybody would want them. And this is the only one possible. No, maybe all three cars are totally fantastic cars. But for me right now, where I'm in my life, this would be the better choice.
Right.
You know, so the non-judgmental way, we're still discerning, but we're not making the other cars bad.
So there's a better decision for you at that particular moment. Correct.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which I think that's important. So there's a judgment about what's better for you at that moment, rather than this is good or this is bad. And that's like the biggest difference.
And we know we have certain political leaders who make everything either good or bad.
Of course,
language. So we're reframing this a little bit.
Of course, yeah, which is really, really important. So, you know, I mean, I want to like kind of in some ways like draw us back, because you and I totally like hit the ground running and just kind of deep dive. And so I kind of want to have you maybe share with the people that are listening, like, why is it that having some of these practices like mindfulness or meditation or like this state of like relaxed attention, why is that so important, and how does that contribute to our success, right? Like, I mean, you and I know that, and so I think that we just kind of, but I think that it would be a really good thing for people to hear from you.
Well, I'm gonna put some business language around.
Please, yes, I would like that.
When people ask me, so what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would say I help very successful people to be more fully present and to more deeply connect with other people. And you might go, so why the heck is that important?
Yes.
Well, when I more fully connect with other people in the business sense, number one, I enjoy each moment more, and people are much more eager to perform for me, which means there's a very tangible financial benefit to the organization. So on a personal level, I enjoy every moment of my work more because I pay attention to connection and relationship. Mm-hmm. And financially, the benefits, there's lots of studies that show that it's sort of a no-brainer. And I am, to go to Termi's before, I'm having the courage to show up more fully embodied,
mm-hmm.
Which means I'm not trying so hard, and I'm allowing it to go deeper.
And I love what you're saying, and I'm actually going to even like break it down. And if it doesn't resonate with you, please, you know, call me on that.
Yeah.
Because I think that when you're showing up more fully embodied, you're also being more authentic.
Yeah,
you are
exactly.
Being more grounded, more present, which actually is going to draw people to you more naturally, right? Like, people are going to be drawn to you, both clients and partners and employees, right? Like, they're going to want to work for you.
Yeah.
They're going to want to work with you. They're going to want to collaborate with you. They're going to have fun with you, right? And then financially, then, I mean, if that's not like so evident, right? So we're talking about, when employees are happy, they perform better, right? When their employees feel seen, heard, validated, they're so much more willing to go the extra mile for you, right? So that it's also about leadership and creating a culture of excellence.
Because I've read a lot of books on leadership, and sometimes I get bored with reading all that stuff.
Yes.
But one thing I read religiously, this is a little column,
uh-huh.
every Sunday in the New York Times business section,
uh-huh.
the columnist, his name is Adam Bryant, and he interviews successful CEOs about their wisdom.
Okay.
And his office is called Corner Office, and I read it religiously. So this last Sunday, he interviewed Barbara Corcoran, who is a judge on Shark Tank, the
uh-huh.
popular show.
Uh-huh.
She is a hugely successful entrepreneur and a legend in Manhattan real estate. And he asked her, so when you hire somebody, what are the things you look for in somebody? And I loved her answer because it's so aligned with what we're saying. She said, I'm looking for three things. She said, first of all, I don't even look at the resume until after I've had the conversation.
Right.
The first thing I look for is I want to make sure the light is on.
Mm.
And, you know, light goes to deep soul spirit. And she said, to me, it means light means there is something positive coming
mm-hmm.
from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I use that phrase in my own life to say that light was on and that light wasn't.
Yeah.
The second one she said is, I wrote about this in front of me. The third one was you talk about happiness. She said, I want to make sure the person I'm speaking with is a happy person. She said, unhappy people don't succeed.
Yeah.
And the tricky part is, because we all put our best face forward in an interview,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to read, but the unhappiness comes out in sort of little aside, a little sarcasm, the frown on the face.
Micro-expressions,
you can fake happiness only for so long.
Correct.
And the third thing she said is, I need people who have energy. Because I believe in life, it's all about energetic connection.
Yeah.
So but she basically talked about the three intangibles. She said, I don't even read the resume until later. If she said 90% of all people who are successful at work have these three things, and that's where I begin. And it relates to what I said, which is those people are good connectors. People want to work with them.
Yeah.
All that stuff. It makes sense, but I like it when she spelled it out beautifully.
Yeah, and I mean, and I love it too because I often say that I hire for attitude and not skills because
mm-hmm.
I can teach skills to anybody, even if it takes me a little bit, but I cannot change who they are, you know? So
yeah.
I do the same. I don't even, like the papers, I'm like, oh, the papers are going to look the same, you know? Like I need to sit with them. I need to feel their energy. I need to look at them, you know, and spend time with them. And also, like for me, it's like, is this a person that I actually want to keep talking to and keep spending time with? Or am I like looking at the clock, like waiting for them to like leave, you know? That like tells me a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's, you mentioned the piece about energy, and I love this because I'm huge about energy. Like I think that peak performance and high performance is all about learning how to manage all of our energy sources. And so I'd love to hear your perspective on kind of that energy component. You talked about riding the wave of energy. So I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
There are many ways to enter this conversation. So I'm going to enter it from this place. Most of the people I have the pleasure to work with at some point have been given psychological assessments.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are based on Jungian models.
Yeah.
The common one that you probably know is the Myers-Briggs indicator,
mm-hmm.
Which I just want to say on record, I can't stand. I refuse to do.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you why. Like one of the things they talk about is introverts and extroverts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the common perception that introverts get energy from reflection, from reading, from going inside. Extroverts get energy from the interaction with
mm-hmm.
other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think we have preferences in those directions.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Some people who I really admire talk about the word ambivert,
yeah.
which means successful people are comfortable swinging either way.
Yeah.
The moment we go into certain wisdom,
mm-hmm.
the notion of chi and
mm-hmm.
prana
mm-hmm.
and ki,
mm-hmm.
those are notions of big energy.
Yes.
This is energy that the most common American language people know is about the chakras,
yes.
and know the spine is an
the
energy.
Yep.
Seven energy centers. We can learn how to open and access them. That's an energy that supersedes all of this labeling crap
mm-hmm.
that we do with these assessments.
Right.
Because the big energy
mm-hmm.
and people in other non-Western cultures learn how to access it is bigger than all of these small things.
Right.
And it's accessible to everybody.
Right.
It's accessible to you if you think you're an introvert. It's accessible to you if you think you're an extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy, which means you sense energy in your whole being,
mm-hmm.
different levels to it. And because you have a conscious experience of it, the people that you meet have a conscious experience of it as well. and connection deepens. So one thing I ordered everybody to do, so how the heck do you access that energy? I believe in working with the chakras and then having somebody teach you how to do that. I'm a great believer in yoga and breathing because that breath opens a lot of energy centers and opens up the body. So any physical exercise that intentionally brings more breath energy into your body will help open up those sources. And again, I want to stress this is nothing with psychological labeling limits your experience of this energy. So forget about the labels you've been given. And there's some psychological tools I love, you know, so I believe in that. But the introversion, extroversion storyline is old. Like, forget about it.
So I love that you go into this because I think that there's so much talk about it for sure. And I don't think I have quite as negative view of the MBTI, but I don't actually use, I like to use Kiersey's system because I feel like it's a little bit more deep and holistic rather than just kind of these little labels. But what I love about what you're saying about the introversion and extroversion is that ultimately it's really about learning to manage your energy, though you might have a preference. So for instance, and so I want to just make sure that this is, that I'm understanding what you're saying, and I'm going to use myself as an example. So I think that most people that know me or meet me in social events would say that I'm an extrovert because I am a connector. I like to talk to people. I don't have any problem talking to people and like being silly and weird and all that kind of stuff. But in reality, I would consider myself to be an introvert because even though I'm capable of doing all of those things, I usually crash and then I need about 3 or 4 days where I like need time to like not talk to a whole lot of people and spend a lot of time reading and writing and doing kind of more withdrawn activities. I guess what I'm wondering what you're saying is that if part of this is just about learning to access that energy and manage it in the way that it's going to serve you best, rather than using introversion and extroversion as an excuse for not being able to do something or, you know, saying like I have it or I don't have it kind of thing.
I agree with everything you said, and that was a great explanation. One way to harness it, there's a self-management where we take care of ourselves energetically so we don't deplete.
Right.
And I think successful people know when they need to take a break, you know, what food or drink is nourishing. And that's simple self-care, great personal habits.
Yeah.
And when we talk about relational energy, like you and I are talking right now, successful person would say is, I can tell that Elena is getting really excited about this. She's passionate about it. And let me ride the wave with her. So I join her energy rather than blocking it.
Right.
You know, successful people notice the energy that is coming from the other person. And sometimes we may intentionally block it. It's on purpose because that's not the conversation we want to have. But people who notice the energy and I use the metaphor, ride the wave with the other person. Obviously, we connect deeper, faster, we get in sync more quickly, and it creates more success. But I've seen so many people where you watch a conversation and one person is excited and the other one does not know how to join it and tune in. So those people are energetically misaligned.
Right.
Nothing happens in that conversation.
Right. So to bring this into an applied way, because I can already see some people going like, but like if I'm feeling like tired and depleted and I'm kind of like, right, and all of a sudden I'm having a conversation with somebody that's like really high energy, then should I be changing my energy? And why should I be changing it? And then if I should be changing it, then how do I change it?
So let me tell you. I have a good friend in Fort Lauderdale, Dan Oropesa, who used to run a big networking business. And he said, and he is definitely a high extrovert. He said, what really drives me crazy is when I go to a networking event and I ask somebody, how are you doing? And they say, yeah, I'm feeling a little tired, because I want to say to them, then why the heck did you come and why didn't you stay home? Right? If you're going to network, you get the point, right?
Yeah, totally.
if you're really tired, maybe you need to withdraw and not engage with people. And I think successful people know how to withdraw maybe and just for a minute.
Right.
You know,
right.
Where you sit down, close your eyes, go inward, or you go outside and look at a tree for a moment. You again know what that is.
Yep.
But his point was so well taken. If you choose to engage with me, please don't be tired. You know, I don't want to hear it. And he was absolutely right. You get the point, right?
Yeah, totally. I love it.
But to answer your question, is you fake? Do you act fake energetic in that moment?
Well, I mean, I hate that, right? Like, I don't believe in the faking. Like, my brain's kind of going in different directions, and I love, because you and I love this. It's a fun way to be writing. I don't believe in faking, but I do believe that we are capable of shifting our energy, that we could potentially be in a state of being really upset or confused or something about something, and then realizing, like, whatever, that's over here, and I need to shift my energy to be able to be fully present in this energetic mode to be here now, right? And to me, that's a huge part of the work that I do. So I'm kind of curious, like, how do you see that?
Here's a little guiding principle I follow for myself. I travel a bunch for business, and a little guiding principle I have, even if I'm very tired, there's usually a person sitting next to you or across from you on a plane. My golden rule is I engage with that person. And I remember being on a flight from Chicago flying home to Fort Lauderdale. It was a late flight, and I was sitting in my seat, and I was friggin' exhausted. But you know how they have some of these seats that plop down with the flight attendant? Good day heading sit. So a flight attendant sitting down, she's clearly exhausted as well, but because she's facing me, there's no way I can avoid her.
Right.
And I'm going to make it. And she had, like, very short hair, and I made up the story that she just got over cancer. You know how a woman has very short hair? That was my story.
Yeah.
She looked exhausted. But there was a kindness to her. And I looked at her and I just said, hey, I said, where are you coming from? And she said, I've just flown from Shanghai. It's been a long flight. We spoke for an hour and a half, even though I was completely exhausted. It became a really intimate conversation. There was a beautiful spirit about her. And when she left, she just said to me, thank you for this conversation. And I felt more energetic at the end than I did at the beginning. That was my lesson around, neither her or I were rah-rah, cheery energy. We were both really tired.
Right.
But the act of engaging with another person, and again, our energies were matched, thank God. We were both ready for a low-key conversation. I felt more energized afterwards. And I remember that story because I remember that when I feel tired, let me at least say hello to the person next to me and see what can happen.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so beautiful and so much also captures the essence of this entire conversation of being, because I think that being mindful is also about being open to the present moment and being open to the possibility and really living in the possibility of what could happen rather than having any particular expectation of anything.
Right.
So I know that Akeem, like, you and I could probably, like, talk forever and ever and ever. And I'm realizing that we have, like, almost like just 5 minutes left. And so I would love for you to kind of share a little bit about, you know, A, how can people contact you and find you, what are ways that they can engage with you, and
My main business is called Influence, with the Latin origin of the word influence. It's actually spelled I-N-F-L-U-E-N-S. So you can go to www.influence.com, and I have a weekly message that people from all over the world receive, subscribe to. It's totally free. Called Energy Boost, so it relates to what we just talked about, and it's really very practical tips about how to energize your relationships that week. So if you like the conversation Elena and I are having, there's nothing I'm selling you in it, you are just getting a message each week called Energy Boost. go to www.influence.com and check that out. You know, I have three books out that you can find on Amazon that are related to personal excellence. You can find those.
Can you spell it again? Yeah. Because I wanted to make sure that I got it right and that people get it, because it's a little bit different spelling.
www.influence, uh-huh. I'll spell it INFLUEN, like Nancy, S like Sam, mm-hmm. .com.
Perfect.
And you can sign up for the energy boost. The other thing I wanted to say, because I just did the TEDx talk, which will be released next week, so it's not available yet, but okay. My last name is Novak, N-O-W-A-K. I talk about, it's called Enough Already, the notion of what it means to be enough and operating from a place of enough. Because we live in a society that in many ways that we so take for granted keeps telling us that we're not enough.
Yeah.
We're not exercising enough. We're not successful enough. We haven't studied enough. You talked about credentials earlier.
Yes.
And that wreaks such havoc on folks.
Mm-hmm.
The moment we show up with a deep knowledge that if we do absolutely nothing, we're still enough, then, to use your term, other possibilities happen.
I love that. And I'm so glad that you're mentioning that, because I think it's such a powerful lesson. I think that's something that I just very, very recently kind of really fully grasped and felt that in an embodied sense, because I think my whole life I felt like I needed to be doing things and doing all the stuff, and that I finally realized, like, it's not what you do, it's who you are, right?
Yeah.
And that's really what you're talking about. If you can just, like, relax enough and let who you are guide, then...
Yeah, and that talk will be released on the TED channel next week, and it'll be available to anybody. It doesn't cost you anything, but it's a message that's important to me, because I coach I work with really successful people who manage multi-billion dollar portfolios.
Mm-hmm.
They're all at the VP level, CEO level, and higher. And deep down, they believe that they're not enough, they're not doing enough. And that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
These are people who are super successful, and they're still driven by the sense that it's not enough.
Yeah.
And we got to get rid of that.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, totally. And, I mean, you know, I'm going to be bold and say something that's kind of a big statement, but I really believe it. I really believe that the key to world peace is self-love. And because we reflect outwardly what we create inwardly, you know? And so in some ways, what you're talking about is that, right? That when we can really finally get rid of the sense of that we're not good enough and really love ourselves and appreciate ourselves, then we can reflect that outwardly. And then we can stop being like, oh, I'm better than you. And this is, you know, better than blah, 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 and all of the conflicts that we have. So.
Totally agreed.
I am so incredibly moved by you and your presence, your spirit, your knowledge, all of the things that you have shared with us. Akeem, I'm really, really honored that you got to join me today. I'm just really delighted to get to hear from so I guess we're getting the warning that the show is going to end in 90 seconds. And so if we want to connect with Akeem again, is www.influence.com. And then Akeem, if there's any last word or last thoughts you want to leave with us.
I think that if we can find the right balance between you know, the sweet spot for success is in the middle between those two.
Okay. Awesome. Find the balance between thriving and accepting. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. If you didn't catch the live show, you can go to our my Facebook feed on luminescentlife.com, or you can sign up for the video at intuitivebusinessmastery.com/radio. And until then, defy the ordinary, become extraordinary. Thank you so much, Akeem.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.